Hi, and welcome back to Undisclosed, our unfiltered weekly episode. Rabia here. I'm here as always with my colleagues, Colin Miller and Mikkel Delhan. Hi, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you?
I'm well. How are you guys?
Doing great.
Enjoying the sun today.
But yeah.
Probably not as
much. Is it nice and sunny in D.C.? See, I wouldn't know. I'm in the Mexican Riviera, you see.
Hey, we have 79 degrees today, so I'm not mad about that.
I love it that the DMV waited for me to leave to give me the weather I want. I had to pay for this. How are you doing, Colin?
Doing well. It's lower 80s here in South Carolina today. I'm going to go swimming after we do this call, so I can't complain.
Oh, nice. I don't even know what day it is anymore. For real. I mean, that's what it's like once you know, you're like, I'm on vacation. No idea what day it is, but enjoy your swimming. I've got a story that I want to talk about. It's kind of wild. Any kind of like updates we want to start with, though? Mikkel, I know like you're the one keeping us on the Guthrie case. Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, as far as Nancy Guthrie's case is concerned, even though we're 2 months out already, which is crazy to think about, there's nothing major to update you on. You know, still no suspects, still no results from the genealogy, still just looking, you know, investigating, trying to figure out what the deal is. There's obviously tons of theories out there.
Yeah, at least what's known publicly, right? Like, I'm assuming.
It's still active, right? It's still an active investigation. It's not like they're saying, oh, it's 2 months out, so like we did whatever we could, but nothing major, unfortunately.
Yeah. I have an update on one of our undisclosed cases.
Sure.
So this is the case of Darrell Ewing. And Darrell Ewing and his co-defendant, Rico Searcy, were convicted of the murder of J.B. Watson in downtown Detroit. And his defense, Darrell's defense, was always, I was at a repast with my family setting up the AV equipment. And notwithstanding his alibi and the weakness of the eyewitnesses, he was convicted. And as we covered on our series, his conviction was ultimately reversed. And a big part of his case is Tyree Washington, another man, has confessed to the murder of J.B. Watson. And so as the prosecution was gearing up for a retrial after his conviction was reversed, there were a number of discovery violations, including connected to statements made by Tyree Washington, the alternate suspect. And so the circuit court dismissed the retrial against Darrell Ewing. And there were oral arguments a couple weeks ago. And then just last Thursday, the Court of Appeals of Michigan upheld the circuit court's order. And so I'm sure the state will appeal to the state Supreme Court. But as things stand, all charges have been dismissed against Darrell Ewing, who is pursuing a law degree, by the way.
Wow.
That's amazing. That is an amazing update. That's so good to hear. All right. I wanted to say, we got a comment about something, and this was not an episode. I mean, well, we did have obviously the team on, but about Sonny Burton's, our coverage of the Sonny Burton case and his impending execution from a couple of weeks ago. And thankfully, the execution was stopped. And I assume that just, I don't know if it automatically then converts into a life sentence. I need to check in with his legal team to see kind of what the logistics of that are. But there was a comment from one of our listeners, and I apologize because, you know, we get messages in our social media. So that could be on Facebook. It could be on Instagram. We get messages on our Gmail. We get messages on Patreon. I don't remember exactly where the message was, but I wanted to address it. And in the message, our listener expressed that she was really upset that Sonny was referred to numerous times during the episode. In fact, when we had his lawyer and stuff on, as somebody who's wheelchair bound. And the gist of the sentiment was that, like, you know, wheelchair bound makes it seem like if somebody needs the use of a wheelchair, like that's a problem versus it being like a way for them to get around. It makes them able, it gives them access, like, you know, things like that. Like, you're not, I think what she was trying to say is you're not wheelchair bound. Wheelchairs give accessibility, right? And I completely get that. I think what needs to be understood is, first of all, you know, when the case came to us to highlight and raise the awareness, we obviously, it was under the gun. It was like a week before his execution was scheduled. And I was sent like case summary, like talking points, things that like the advocacy team wanted to be out in social media. And that language was kind of part of it. to not necessarily to like cast any kind of judgment about like, you know, whether or not he's bound to a wheelchair or not bound to a wheelchair. But this was for an audience of one, which is the governor, okay? And I think the idea was to use that language for the, you know, to understand the optics of what it would be like to execute somebody like him, who would have to be taken to the execution chamber and put on a gurney, like from a wheelchair. So, you know, I completely agree with like the sentiment of our listener, and I apologize for offending anybody with that language. It was language that we also, it was like part some of the talking points, which are important because again, it was an audience really of one at this point that we needed to get to. We wanted to move the heart of the governor in this situation. But anyhow, anything you guys want to like kind of ch any thoughts about that?
Not really. I mean, I think to your point, you know, it obviously we're not trying to offend anybody, and if we've got a certain amount of information that we're trying to relay in a short time frame, like we're just kind of collecting and we're doing what we can to get to put it on our platform, you know, to get the word out there.
And it was language also his attorney uses, his advocate uses. But again, I don't think it's necessarily. It's for one specific purpose. It's like to push like the idea, the optic of what it would be like to like who are you trying to execute here? Like this is a person who like especially considering like is he a threat to society? Is he a threat to
Exactly.
anybody? Like
Right.
what are we trying to do here, right? So that's kind of the explanation, not necessarily an excuse for it. So I wanted to address that, especially because the story I'm talking about today also involves somebody at the center of it who is differently abled.
Today, I want to talk to you about something a lot of us are putting off: life insurance. With all the different hats I wear, it's definitely something I put off for a long time. And I get it. It sounds like a whole thing. But if you have family or loved ones that depend on your income, a term life insurance policy is an important step you can take today to help protect their financial future. Fabric by Gerber Life makes it quick and easy. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance that you can get done today. Made for busy parents like you. All online, on your schedule, right from your couch. You can be covered in under 10 minutes, often with no health exam required. If you have life insurance through work, that's a good start, but it may be less than what your family needs and could disappear if you change jobs. Term life insurance from Fabric follows you wherever you go. Fabric has flexible, high-quality policies that fit your family and your budget, like $1 million in coverage for less than $1 a day. Or more or less, depending on your needs. And there's no risk. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can cancel at any time. Fabric also has free digital wills, tools to invest in your kids' future, and more, all right from your phone. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to help protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/justice. meetfabric.com/justice. And use my links, the name that I sent you. MEET fabric.com/justice. Policy is issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company, not available in certain states. Price is subject to underwriting and health questions.
This story is about 27-year-old Dayton James Weber. And Dayton James Weber is a remarkable young man. He has been featured in the media since he was very young. You know, when he was 12 years old, he was featured like on ESPN again. I mean, there's been many features about him, like in the sports world. Just a couple years ago, he was featured in ESPN as somebody who is like an inspirational figure that, you know, he wrestles and plays footballs, and he is now a professional cornhole player. In 2023, he wrote an article for the Today Show for their website about, like, you know, how what it's like being an athlete. And the reason he's inspirational and he's been featured so many times is not necessarily because he's like an incredible athlete, it's because he's overcome incredible odds. When he was 10 months old, he contracted a severe bacterial infection, and that ended up requiring a quadruple amputation, both of his legs and lower arms. And his parents were told at the time that he had a 3% chance of survival. He not only survived, he thrived. I mean, even as a
Really?
kid, yeah, even as a child, I'm telling you, as a child, his determination and just that maybe it was like his personality. I think he could probably do more than like my 9-year-old kid can do. I mean, he, you know, the parents were told he might need like a wheelchair to get around. He may or may not ever be able to like walk properly, you know, depending on how he gets by on prosthetics. But he walked, he learned how to drive like a go-kart, quad bike. He learned to write, and all without the use of prosthetics. Like he self-taught, his family supported him. He's an incredible go-getter. Okay. When he was 12, that article that was written about him on ESPN, it was a profile. At the time, he had finished fourth in the Southern Maryland Junior Wrestling League. He's from Maryland, my backyard. So you know, he's wrestling in middle school. He's doing all these middle school and high school sports, again, without the use of prosthetics. And just very, very determined. Now, in 2023, that article that he wrote, he talked about becoming a cornhole champion. Now, all I've ever known about cornhole is I've seen it pop up once in a while in a backyard barbecue. I'm not very good at it, but he is incredible at it. He became a champion in this sport, and there is, in fact, an entire league called the American Cornhole League. So in 2023, he writes this article, and in it, I'm just quoting directly from it. He says, while being a professional athlete, and he's a professional athlete as a cornhole competitor, takes up much of my time, I also create content for my YouTube channel and hope to begin taking on motivational speaking engagements, which absolutely this young man should do, given
For
his
sure.
strength. To train for cornhole, I play 3 or 4 hours a day, much like any other competitor. But I stand out because I do not wear my prosthetic legs during competition. Generally, I don't use prosthetic arms because they don't allow me to feel things such as a cornhole bean bag with enough sensitivity. I've overcome difficulties, and I think others can too. For much of my life, I've grappled with people underestimating me because of how I look. People assume I can't operate heavy equipment, for example, but I can. That's why I hope people give disabled people a chance. We will definitely surprise you. If we say we can do it, we can do it. We've probably done it before. Now, he does go on to surprise us. Now, just about a week ago, on the night of March 22nd in Charles County, Maryland, there was a murder that took place. And here is, I'm going to read from the Charles County Sheriff's Post. The Charles County Sheriff's Office, they put out this post on social media. So I'm just going to read from it. And the way it connects to to Dayton is that Dayton was the perp in this case. All right. On March 23rd, so this is the very next day. This incident took place on the evening of March 22nd. The very next day, this is what it said. On March 22nd at 10:25 p.m., officers with the La Plata Police Department were flagged down by two people near the area of La Plata Road and radio station in La Plata, Maryland. A preliminary investigation revealed the witnesses were in the back seat of a car. Okay. So apparently, they were picked up in this car. When they got in the car, Dayton was driving, Dayton Weber was driving, and there was somebody sitting in the front passenger seat. Okay. And these two people are picked up from work. I don't have any more details about where they're working. They get in the back. Now, as they're driving, again, Dayton is the one driving. He gets in an argument with the passenger. Okay. And then he pulls out a gun and shoots the passenger in the head twice as he's driving. Then he pulls over and he asks these two witnesses to help him get rid of the body. They jump out of the car when the car pulls over, and they're like, oh, heck to the no. And he takes off. He takes off with the body in the car. And the person he killed was another 27-year-old young man named Broderick Michael Wells of Waldorf, Maryland. Okay, so these two people who get out of the car, then they flag down like some other folks, and officers show up and they tell them what happens. They all knew each other, so they're like, you know, they immediately identified who the killer was, who got killed. The patrol officers responded. They started canvassing. A couple of hours later, and about 15 miles away, they find somebody calls 911 and says, "There's a body in my yard." Okay. Officers respond. They find the victim there, Broderick Michael Wells, and he's pronounced dead at the scene. They get an arrest for Weber and they find his car in Charlottesville, Virginia. So he's taken off. He is across state lines. But the car is empty and they find out that he is at a nearby hospital seeking treatment for a medical issue, which is interesting because he has not been shot. There was In fact, apparently, as far as I know, no physical altercation between the two men. Anyhow, he's released from the hospital. They arrest him. He was extradited just a day or two ago to Maryland, and he's charged with first degree murder, second degree murder, and then related charges, blah, blah, blah. So obviously, there is the question of how a quadruple amputee. I completely understand how a quadruple amputee can drive. We've all seen vehicles that have been specially equipped, right, to allow people who might not have arms or legs to drive. That's not uncommon. It's been around for a very long time. He himself has posted on his TikTok, like videos of him shooting. There's one TikTok video in which the caption is "No arms, no legs, shooting a 9mm." He's very good with a gun. How he managed to be driving and pull out the gun at the same time is, I don't know. But you know what? I mean, like, if he's able to drive with, let's say, just the use of his legs and not, I mean, like, and then he can use his hands. But this all happened like very quickly. So, but obviously, like, all of these words in a headline together, cornhole champion, quadruple amputee, murder. I mean, like, it's all like, wait, what? My
Yeah,
head, I
that's
just had
wild.
to see it's the kind of thing I've always wanted to write, like a mystery novel or something like that. I'm like, but you can't even make this stuff up. You can't make this stuff up. It's wild. Okay, so how did this cornhole champion end up becoming a killer? Well, his ex-girlfriend named Tori Mattingly, and I can talk about her because she's gone public, she's posted on Facebook, she's talked to media outlets. She says that she had been seeing Weber for 4 years. They've been dating for 4 years, and she said that he has a very dark side, and she can totally see that he would do something like this. And she had also, after she broke up with him, been dating the victim. Okay, here's what she wrote in a Facebook post. Watching people say, quote, "This doesn't sound like him," or "He would never do that," is honestly sickening. You didn't live with him, I did. For 4 years, I saw the side of him that nobody else wanted to believe existed. The anger, the control, the abuse, the kind of darkness you don't just mistake, the kind that makes you feel unsafe in your own home, in your own skin. So no, I'm not shocked he's being convicted of murder, charged, technically, because I know what he's capable of. I lived it every single day. You saw the version he wanted you to see. I saw the truth. And just because he didn't show you that side doesn't mean it wasn't real. It just means I was the one he chose to break behind closed doors. So please stop saying it isn't him. It is him. Some of us had to survive him. Now, to be fair, obviously he's been charged. He is guilty until proven innocent. There are two witnesses to the actual murder, but maybe his defense will be it was one of them. I don't know. I don't know how any of this is going to like go down, right? This is quite fresh, but why couldn't it be one of them, right? Maybe because, well, yeah, I mean, who knows, right? I mean, that would be a smart defense unless he takes a plea.
Question
Now,
would be direction of the bullets entering his body, right?
right, the
Consistent with the
direction of
back
bullets.
seat or consistent with the driver would tell the tale.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But also, yeah, I mean, like, Weber could be like, or even if the directional bullet suggested it was a driver, Weber could be like, well, I wasn't driving, I was in the back, right?
Possibly,
Like somebody else was driving. Yeah. But if they found the car and the car had all the equipment necessary for him to drive, then probably he was driving, unless somebody switched it up, right? Now, I generally don't ever go to the comment section, but on this Facebook post, I had to go to the comment section because people commenting were people who knew these people. Okay. So this was an interesting comment. I'm not going to say who wrote it, but a lot of people did say, I could never have believed it. I could never have believed he did something like this. But of course, we have no idea what people can really be like. Anyhow, but this adds a little bit to the whole story. This woman posts that it's so hard to see people so low speak so lowly of him, meaning Weber, the alleged killer, and only him. I'm not saying he was a saint, but to act as if the victim didn't tote guns 24/7. So what she's saying is the victim, again, sorry, his name is Broderick. Did I say that right? Sorry, let me go back and Broderick. I haven't heard that name before. Broderick Wells. What she's saying is that Broderick also was like, okay, well, let me go on and read it. It said, to act as if the victim has not been to Dayton's house with multiple people, all with guns threatening to shoot it up. So it sounds like there was like existing beef. She goes, dude slept with his girlfriend to specifically brag to everyone about it. These are the facts I know to be true. So yes, Dayton may have been angry, but so was the victim. Nobody deserves to lose their life, but when you live the lifestyle, unfortunately, this is a common outcome. So it sounds like, I mean, there was existing beef. I mean, like, if what she's saying is true, then the victim had gone to the house and threatened to shoot up, Brandon. Now, that ex-girlfriend, Tori, has released a video. In fact, she shared it with the media, in which you see Dayton on his like porch, and he's screaming at her, and I mean, she shared it to kind of prove that he's got this dark side, but really what he's screaming over and over is, get off my property. And so the question is, why aren't you getting off his property? Get off his property. Like, you know what I mean? So I don't know. Yeah. But whatever his personality might be or aptitude might be, it's going to come down to the evidence in this. And yeah, I mean, maybe the victim had a gun in the car. Like, we don't know. I'm just wondering what he was doing in the car, what they were doing in the car together before they even picked up the other two guys, which I think is crazy.
Well, and are the other two guys like his friends, the victim's
They
friends,
have a
like
motive to lie
randoms?
or tell the truth.
They're not identified. We don't, but they just, all we know is that they knew both of them. It sounds like this whole group of people knew each other, right? Like, it's, yeah, so wild story. And yeah, I was like, when I saw this, I messaged Colin and Meethal immediately. I was like, I'm calling dibs on this one. I gotta talk about this.
Well,
So yeah.
it reminds me of that other case. I can't remember what the man's name was, Oscar something.
Pistorius.
Yeah, right. I mean, that case, was that South Africa?
Oh,
Maybe?
South Africa.
I
mean,
Definitely. Yeah.
you don't necessarily need limbs to do things, but of course, we'll see what comes of this case.
I mean, they're charging him with first degree. Well, yeah, I guess that makes sense. The victim was shot twice in the head. This was not like a, it was definitely something he intended to do. But all right, well, that's my story this week.
I can go
Yeah,
next because I'll stay in the state of Maryland.
oh, okay.
And specifically, my case is out of Edgewater, Maryland, which is just outside Annapolis. And so this is back on August 9th, 2024. And police officers respond to a report of a stabbing at a fancy waterfront apartment. And when they enter the unit, they find 47-year-old Nancy Ann Houston and 58-year-old James Houston. They're both on the floor in a pool of blood. Nancy Ann has a knife that is impaled in her chest, and there's a second knife found in between the two bodies.
Ooh.
And so on the scene, Nancy Ann is declared dead. James is taken to the Shock Trauma Center in Baltimore. He is diagnosed with serious life-threatening injuries to his upper body and one of his extremities. Ultimately, though, he survives. And this case gets a lot of publicity because this is a fairly well-to-do couple. James was a retired Navy doctor specializing in anesthesia, and Nancy Ann was a high-level director for a pharmaceutical company. And so this is a couple worth multi-million dollars. And there's acrimony between the two of them. So there was this domestic dispute back in March 2023 that led Nancy Ann to get a protective order against James. She then filed for divorce, and by all indications, the divorce proceedings were tense. There were millions of dollars of assets at stake. There was custody of the children. Witnesses say James was trying to reconcile. Nancy Ann refused. And then, basically, a week before they're found in this pool of blood, she starts dating another man. Doesn't sound good for James. But this case is in Anne Arundel County. And the state's attorney there is a person named Ann Leitis, and she is taking the case as the chief state's attorney in Anne Arundel County. And she decides, I'm going to interview witnesses by myself without any other attorneys, without any investigator. And she eventually speaks to James's friend. His name is Stephen Velardis. And Stephen Velardis relays to the state's attorney that back in 2023, James, the husband, had told him that his wife had previously pulled a knife on him. Clearly, this is exculpatory information that the state would have to disclose to the defense. The state's attorney does not turn this over to the defense. As the trial is nearing, this witness speaks to the defense team and says, look, I told the state's attorney about this incident that James told me about where his wife pulled a knife on him. And so the defense says this is a Brady violation. And so we're mere weeks before trial, and there's a hearing that is held in circuit court where the defense is trying to disqualify this state's attorney from the case. And so I'm reading from a court opinion here. In a comprehensive oral decision, the circuit court concluded the state's attorney's lack of disclosure constituted a discovery violation and a violation of the constitutional obligation to disclose exculpatory information under Brady versus Maryland. The court also aired broad frustration with the proceedings. The court expressed skepticism about testimony from the state's attorney and the detectives on several topics, including the state's attorney's reasons for not disclosing the information to defense counsel, her practice of interviewing witnesses without anyone else present, her communications with the detectives, and Detective Downey's testimony about why he could not verify statements about his communications with the state's attorney. Ultimately, the court ruled that by interviewing Mr. Velardis and other witnesses without an investigator present, the state's attorney had improperly made herself a witness in the case. And the circuit court decides, A, you are off the case, and B, your office needs to erect this firewall. You're not allowed to talk to any of the attorneys in your office about this case because you're, in
Wow.
effect, a potential witness in this trial. And so this state's attorney, rather than just accepting it, she enlists the Maryland Attorney General to argue her case, and
Oh my
eventually
God.
it goes up to the state Supreme Court in Maryland. And just last week, in their opinion, the state Supreme Court says you can't appeal the order dismissing you from the case. You cannot prosecute this case. You can appeal this firewall. And they don't get to the merits, but presumably there'll be another hearing to decide can she talk to the other attorneys in her office? But I've never seen a case like this with a Brady violation where the prosecutor is actually kicked off the case and told you can't talk to anyone else in your office about this trial
Okay.
because you're a key witness in this case now.
Colin, I'm very confused about something. Okay. The trial has not happened yet, or it has
Correct.
happened.
This is sort of an interlocutory appeal before the trial starts.
Okay. So I did not know that a court can find a Brady violation before the actual trial. I thought that's something that's like a post-conviction finding, right? Like,
Yeah.
it's not because if you haven't gotten a trial, what if they disclose it right before trial? Like they could have disclosed it still. Like they still have time to disclose it, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
How does it run? I'm confused.
And it's a
Please,
great
you're the
question, and
professor. Yeah.
this is something I teach to my students, which is there are two aspects to Brady, and a lot of people and a lot of courts don't recognize the second. The first is the state has the obligation to turn over material exculpatory evidence. The second is they have to do so in a timely fashion. And in
Yeah,
this
but you know,
case,
look, we know that timeliness stuff is bullshit.
Exactly.
I
I
mean,
know,
like,
and you look,
they.
usually the court says, look, we'll just have a continuance and turn it over, but here
Right.
the court
There's stuff that
said,
gets turned over during
yeah.
trial, like
I think
as
it
the
was
trial's
this
ongoing.
pattern and course of conduct they were not happy with in this county. And so, I mean, they really threw the book at this prosecutor.
Somebody didn't like this prosecutor. This sounds almost
Yeah.
like a little bit personal to
I was gonna say
me.
it's a little personal.
I mean, the question becomes, so Robbie, to the point you were just raising about, who had guns, who was doing what, like, there's the knife in the wife's chest. There's
I
this
was also
second
going to
knife
say, is
between
it
the.
really exculpatory?
Well, is it exculpatory? But, like, did he attack her with two knives? Or he's claiming self-defense. Like, did they each have a knife?
Right.
What was going on? It'll be interesting to see when this case does go to trial, whoever is prosecuting it, what happens. But I mean, it's certainly a very salacious case.
I mean, but he was severely injured as well.
He was. So, I mean, he was on death's door himself. So whether
Okay,
she was
okay.
fighting back and almost killed him, whether this was a mutual quarrel, whether she was the aggressor, I mean, that I'm sure all of that's going to be litigated with a high-powered legal team for this, former Navy doctor.
Yeah. That is a wild case, but also really tragic. Because I mean, like, the kids involved and all that stuff, but the procedural aspect is nuts. I've just never I know you're saying you've never seen a case like this where the prosecutor gets have you ever seen a case in which like a Brady violation gets called out before the trial even commences?
I've blogged about it a few times. It's rare. It is
Oh, sorry.
definitely the
I don't
exception
always
to the
read your blog,
rule.
Colin.
It doesn't
Colin
happen
calling
very
me out.
often, but yeah, in this case it did. But kicked off the case I've seen, told you
Okay.
can't talk to your line-level
Team.
prosecutors about the case at all because you might be a witness. I mean, I've never seen that before.
But doesn't that make sense, though?
It
Like,
does. I
if
mean, if
you,
she's going to be
if,
called as a
yeah.
witness, and I assume she will be called as a witness at trial, and to be, you can't have someone who's giving marching orders to their team, and also you're going to be questioned by, cross-examined by them after the defense calls them as a witness.
Okay, that's really fascinating. Do you know if the, when the trial is? I mean, like, is it? Does
It's
all of this
indefinitely
affect? Does all
delayed
this
because
of this stuff?
this ruling just happened last week, and they need now to decide whether this firewall needs to be enacted. And so I'm assuming it'll be several months before this eventually reaches trial.
I mean, I'm guessing the argument they're going to make is like this is a much a broader issue. Obviously, it's going to affect other prosecutors and other cases and how this is going to, right? Like.
Well, and I mean, anyone who's listening, if you are aware of a case in Anne Arundel County, from what the court is saying, it doesn't sound like this is a one-off. Like this prosecutor is kind of going rogue. And so, I mean, if you have
Oh.
a case that you think is a wrongful conviction there and she was involved in it, might want to look into it.
Or give us a call.
Yeah.
DM us. Executive producer, what's our Gmail?
UndisclosedPod@gmail.com.
There you go. Email us. All right. Thanks for that, Collins. Really interesting. I had not heard of it. On to you, Mito.
So I don't have a new case, but I have two other updates since I feel like doing all the cases that have constant updates. One of them being the Corey Richens update, the Utah woman that was accused of murdering her husband. After the 13-day trial, jury deliberations took just about 3 hours, and they found her guilty on all five counts. So, including aggravated murder, attempted aggravated murder, forgery, and 2 counts of insurance fraud. So, sentencing isn't until mid-May, but I mean, she could face 25 to life. So, yeah, that was quick.
And I was
Wow.
shocked the defense didn't put on a case
I know, no
at
witnesses.
all.
Is
Is
that
that
what
what
happened?
happened?
Yeah, she they had no witnesses.
Really?
Prosecution called 40 people.
For listeners to
Defense and
remind you,
all.
this is the wife who is accused of murdering her husband and then wrote a book about grief after,
A kid's book about grief.
kids book about dealing with grief. And so, no defense case put on, as Meethal notes, 3 hours to conviction. Not surprising.
And she didn't take the
Is
stand either.
That's wild. You're saying that when it was the defense's turn, they just said, we're ready for closing argument. I mean, like, that's it? Why even? Okay. I mean, is that going to be, I'm guessing that a future ineffective assistance claim? I don't know what the strategy here is,
You know,
but.
Meethal, whether there was a plea deal on the offer? Because, I mean, it's very strange to go to trial and then just have no defense case whatsoever when there's solid evidence of guilt, you know?
Yeah, I don't remember seeing anything about that. But I'll have to double check. But yeah, I mean, to your point, after the prosecution calls 40 witnesses, how does the defense not do anything? You know, it's crazy.
And he had died from an overdose, right? Is that what
Yeah,
it was?
fentanyl.
Like fentanyl. So do you have to remind me, I'm sorry. How do they know that he didn't self-dose? I forget. You probably told us last
It
when we
was in a
talked about
cocktail. Like, so, you know, they were saying that she had tried to do this before, like
Right,
in
she had
the same way,
poisoned him
right?
before.
And so in this case, they're saying like there's evidence that, you know, she was getting drugs from a woman, and that woman
Oh,
testified.
that's right.
She
And she
claimed he
also
said it to her.
she was Googling stuff too,
Yep.
right?
So that was the one thing, evidence-wise, and then the digital evidence in addition.
According to the reporting I see, there was no plea deal on the offer. Not surprising.
They had an open and shut case. All right. What's your second update?
The second one was the going back to like tech stuff. The case out of LA County that was, you know, a
Oh,
plaintiff
yeah.
against Meta and Google. So that one, drum roll, please, they lost.
Who's the they?
The Meta and Google or Alphabet.
Really?
Yeah, they lost. The plaintiff won $60 million in damages.
Holy crap.
That's obviously not a lot for the platforms, the tech platforms, but you know. At the same time, at least the jury found them liable for, you know, intentionally designing their platforms to make it addictive for kids and not doing, you know, taking the precautions to make sure that they're either checking the ages or it's so easy for anybody underage to get on there, even with the teen accounts and stuff. But what's crazy is, in addition to that case, simultaneously, there was another one out of New Mexico. And in that case, it was the state against Meta specifically, and they were found liable also for violating state laws regarding child safety and their platform. And so they've got to pay the state of New Mexico $375 million in civil penalties. So,
Really?
those are two huge landmark cases. And obviously,
But
there's
okay.
thousands more. Yeah.
I mean, so there's the monetary damages, but what about like actual change?
Well,
Like
that's the
how?
thing, right? Like, so far, there are thousands of cases against all these different social media platforms. So I think as more and more comes through, like, they're saying you've got to do more. You've got to change kind of how your platforms work. You've got to, introduce more checks to whether it be age, whether it be sexual content that they get, the targeting of underage kids and things like that. So, I mean,
Colin, is that something that a court can order them, or is that just something like can only be done through like to force these platforms? Would it have to be legislated, or can by court
yeah,
order they have to be?
it's a good question. So Mithil mentioned this other case in New Mexico, which after the finding of liability, and there's now a second part of this case, which is answering the question about whether Meta and Google, et cetera, are a public nuisance. Meaning, if it's a public nuisance, this is something that endangers the safety and welfare of the public. And if they find it's a public nuisance, that would be the court ordering them to change their protections and safeguards. And so I'm really interested to
Would a
see.
court have jurisdiction for them to do it outside of that state, though?
Not outside the state. No, that would just be in New Mexico, but it would certainly set a precedent that other litigants in other states could use. And you would imagine that if they lose in New Mexico, that they would take it seriously in other states, even though the ruling only affects that one state.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why everyone was looking to see what happens in New Mexico, what happens in LA County, because they are two different things. One is talking about, child safety, the other one's talking about the addictive nature of the platform. So there's different arguments there. So, well, huge wins, obviously, for the people, at the platforms,
The
but we'll see.
parents.
Yeah,
For the
exactly.
parents, yeah. All right. Well, thanks for those updates. Anything else that we want to, any odds and ends or bits and bobs that we want to cover before we wrap up this week?
I think we're good.
Nothing. All
Nothing
right. Well,
for
we had
now.
a good 2 week break. Now we're back
Yeah.
to the grind. And we're going to be soon, I'm excited, releasing trailers, right, of our upcoming season. So keep an eye out for that. I'm excited for that. Oh, will Rabia finish the producing the season in time? We'll find out. That's all stored up
Rabia will.
in. All right, guys. Rabia will. All right, guys. Thank you so much. I will I'll see you next week then.
All right.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners, it's Meethal. Before I roll through the credits, I've got a few quick notes. By now, most of you probably know about our Facebook community group. If you haven't joined yet, please go to facebook.com/groups/towardjustice and answer three simple questions and you're in. But seriously, answer the questions because a bunch of you are still pending since you've only answered one or two. They're easy questions, I promise. In addition to engaging with us through the Facebook group, you can also leave us a voice note at speakpipe.com/undisclosed. We always check the messages, and so far, I think we've answered all of them. We also have a Patreon page with three different tiers of perks, the lowest one just being a dollar, which allows us to continue to do this work. Other tiers include bonus episodes, early access to merch, and even joining Rabia in a live true crime Zoom discussion. Just go to patreon.com/undisclosedpod. Now, onto the real credits. A huge shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production. Thank you to Patrick Cortez and Ramiro Marquez for our theme music. For anyone new here, you can engage with us online by going to Instagram or Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. We're also on TikTok, YouTube, and X at Undisclosed Pod. Whether you're a new or returning listener, you can always check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our website at undisclosedpod.com. If you would like to follow Colin and Rabia on social media, you can find Rabia at Rabia Squared 2 on Instagram and Colin at Evidence Prof on Instagram, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you all for your continued support and for supporting all of our sponsors. Until next time.